Orcs are pretty much the perfect horror movie villains. They're lean, mean, killing machines, and they look super cool. Shark movies have a long, but perhaps not so illustrious history. The first shark movie ever filmed was 1936's White Death, which featured author Zane Grey as he hunts for a killer shark nicknamed White Death off the coast of Queensland, Australia. It was followed by movies like The Shark Fighters and Shark! With an exclamation point. But it wasn't until 1975 that shark movies really hit their stride. But no, sorry. That's not the shark movie that we're going to talk about today yet. Instead, we're going to fast forward 24 years when sharks became bigger, smarter, faster, meaner. Rennie Harlan's Deep Blue Sea revitalized the shark movie after years of sequels and B-movies, which, let's be honest, I also love.
Tell me, Mr. Franklin, have you ever known anyone with Alzheimer's?
No.
What if you could end all that suffering with a single pill? Give me till Monday morning, 48 hours. I'll give you results that'll skyrocket your stock price.
In the most advanced research facility in the world.
Wow.
Beneath its glassy surface, a world of gliding monsters.
A team of specialists is working against the clock.
Did someone order the fish?
On an experiment to benefit mankind.
Sharks never show any loss of brain activity as they age.
We're this close to the reactivation of a human brain cell.
But before they can save millions of lives...
Tell me I didn't see that. They recognize that gun.
It's impossible. Sharks do not swim backwards. They can't.
They'll have to find a way to save their own.
Did you feel something?
Jim and I use gene therapies to increase their brain mass.
What is that?
As a side effect, the sharks got smarter.
Somebody, please, tell me what that is.
So I'm your host, Sherry. This is just your reminder that, as always, we'll be breaking down the plot in great detail. So be prepared. There will be loads of spoilers. I highly recommend, if you haven't seen the movie, proceed at your own risk. Joining us as we head to Aquatica are Michelle and return guests, Katie and Ariana. Why don't you each take a second to introduce yourselves?
Sure, so I'll go. I'm Ariana. I have three cats and a husband and live in New York and work in television and just am generally obsessed with anything true crime and anything horror and I love this movie. I'm really excited to chat about it. And the biggest thing in my life is that we recently, and I think I talked about this last time, we recently got a cat wheel and my cats love it. And it's all I do every day is just watch them run on the wheel.
I love that that's still the big thing right now.
I'm still obsessed.
Like, it's been 2 weeks.
It's still exciting to watch.
That's okay.
We set up our cat cam because we have a couple cat cams for like when we're gone. We set up a cat cam just to point at the thing so that now it catches every time someone gets on it, and it's very satisfying.
I will go. I'm Katie. I also live in New York. Ari kind of said everything that I was going to say. I love true crime and I love horror. I've loved it since my brother terrified me wearing the Scream mask when I was a child. Thanks for that, bro. And yes, I am in New York and I'm transferring into a voiceover career. So that's a whole thing that I'm dealing with now. But other than that, I work with kids all the time. So I have to have all the energy all the time. Yay.
I'm Michelle. I didn't plan for what I was going to say for this part of the show. So hi. I don't have a cool job. I work at a grocery store during the day, and then I come home at night and I watch movies. I work on my podcast. I have a podcast with my friend Brian Kuiper called Movies for Life, and that's pretty much it. I wish I could have cats. I can't have cats in my apartment, though. I'm jealous.
Oh, that they're is not allowed.
I know.
You got to move.
I know. I'm planning on it.
The only option.
Pretty much. And hey, Deep Blue Sea was my pick for the episode.
That's true. Oh,
nice.
So kudos to you, because this I think is going to be a lot of fun to talk about. I know it's one of my favorite shark movies.
Yeah, me mine too.
Which leads me to the question before I subject you to the Scaredy Cat 5, Michelle.
Oh, God.
What would you say your top 3 shark movies are?
Ooh.
I know, it's a tough question.
Mine are pretty basic, I would say. Deep Blue Sea is definitely one of them. Jaws is an obvious answer, but I mean, it's so good. How can you not pick it? And then probably The Shallows. I loved The Shallows.
Oh, it's so good.
Great choice.
It's like half shark, half Blake Lively is the reason for loving that movie, right?
Awesome. Yeah.
Katie, what about you?
Oh, gosh. I love sharks, so this was hard for me because I feel like almost all of them are cheesy in the best way, and that's my favorite camp town to live in. So Deep Blue Sea is probably one of them. I honestly, this is terrible, but I was debating between Deep Blue Sea and Jaws as being one of them, which they're completely different. But I've seen Deep Blue Sea way too many times, so I feel like It's got to be on there. I think The Meg is probably on there. That's the recent one that happened with Rainn Wilson. Yes. That's ridiculous.
Yes, it's amazing. I love it. I love it.
Mine, yeah. So fun. And for the other one, choosing between a few, one of them is called Shark Night. Dustin Milligan's in it. And it's freaking ridiculous, but also terrible. So I don't know if I can pick that. Or there's one that's so, so terrible that I want everybody to watch it. And it's called, I think it's called Sand Sharks. It's awful. And it's exactly what you think. They come out of the sand at the beach, and it makes no sense.
Shark Night's pretty awesome, though. I kind of love that one.
It is. It is. Especially when it's in 3D, because it's even more ridiculous.
Oh, I love a good 3D movie. I haven't seen Shark Night. I'll have to check that one out. Or
it's like
sharks.
The sharks that are in cages within like a lake. It's really devious.
And there's several different kinds of sharks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, mine, so you know, funny enough, I've never actually seen Jaws, which I feel like is a horrible thing to say as someone who loves horror movies. But yes, actually, Michelle and Katie have, here. I know, Michelle and Katie have both of my favorites and their favorites, which is definitely The Meg. Love it. So stupid. So over the top. Like, love. And then the Blake Lively one, The Shallows.
The Shallows.
It was so good. And look, I'll watch anything she does because she just looks like a beautiful little doll. Like, I'll just watch whatever she does. But
pretty much
I did not expect for that movie to be so good.
Me neither. I thought it was going to be bored, but it was like thrilling the whole
time. It was very good. Yeah. So love that. And then the only other thing, and it's obviously not a shark movie, but I'm going to like give it an honorable mention, which is Piranha.
Yes. Oh my God, I almost said this.
I was like, I don't think we can call it a shark movie, but like definitely.
It's a Jaws ripoff.
Yeah. I mean, because Adam Scott, and it's so funny.
It's so good. I saw it in theaters and it was like, I had no idea a movie could be that fun and like that ridiculous.
Oh my God, I love it so much. Yeah.
Have you seen the original?
No.
Oh.
I didn't know there was an original.
Neither did I.
Yeah, there's two.
Yeah, it's very different. Very different than Piranha 3D, but I still would highly recommend it.
Oh, man.
Also, if you haven't seen it, you need to see Santa Jaws.
Oh, my God. I forgot about Santa Jaws. Oh, shit. I should include. No, that's on my top three. That's such a good one.
You know, there's also one called Snow Sharks where they come out of the snow.
Stop.
I can't even get through this sentence because it's so stupid. But, oh, I forgot to mention this, but Sand Sharks also has Hulk Hogan's daughter in it, which makes it even better because she's
Brooke?
Awful. Yes.
Brooke that used to have a reality show, Brooke?
So bad. Yes.
Oh, my God.
So bad. Oh,
yeah,
man.
Okay.
I love anything where they're in an environment that makes no sense. So pretty much, I guess, all of Sharknado, like the space ones. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh.
I forgot about Sharknado, too.
No one said Sharknado.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of shocking that nobody said Sharknado.
I know, I forgot about
the
that
acting
one.
Is so bad for me that I can't do yeah, it fair enough. Much.
Yeah, George and I went through like a weird rabbit hole one day. It was like, I think we had just watched Sharknado, and Amazon Prime was like pushing all of these like B movies mm-hmm. that was like yeah. giant shark and giant versus giant alligator, and it was just like so bad and amazing, and you know those are great, but I can't even remember what they're called, but I think they're called like they have like really bad titles.
Oh, there's so many with like
all those sci-fi original movies. Yeah
exactly.
All right, Michelle, with that warm up, now it's time for your Scaredy Cat 5 questions. Are you ready?
Hit me.
What is your favorite subgenre of horror?
Supernatural, ghosts, definitely.
Oh, excellent. That's also probably my favorite. What is your favorite horror movie?
Child's Play.
Oh, you're like, just you are like, you're like, I know, I'm definitely.
She's ready.
Yeah, yeah.
We covered this on the show. We had to pick. Like, what's your favorite?
So what is it about Child's Play, do you think?
Oh, gosh. It's just, it was one that I grew up with. It's kind of like, I can't remember a time where I wasn't watching Child's Play, but it used mm-hmm. to scare the shit out of me when I was younger, but I still wanted to watch it all the time. Like, I was that kind of, like, weird, obsessive kid about it, and like, I couldn't get enough of it, even though he terrified me, and then just kind of growing up and, like, falling more in love with horror movies, like, that was always the most effective one for me, and now he's, like, my favorite. I love Chucky. I like the sequels. I love the new show.
The show was so good.
The series has just been so amazing, watching it evolve from like where it started in the first movie. But it like mm-hmm. makes sense in a weird way. And I kind of love seeing what new different places they're going to take it to.
What is the first horror movie you remember seeing?
I don't have the kind of memory for that stuff. I don't know. Probably one of the Child's Play, or like, I just remember I was the younger sister. I had like a older sister was like 5 years older than me, and so I was the annoying little sister that would like watch movies at her sleepovers, you know, with her friends, and they would always watch horror movies. So it was like, it was Child's Play, and then it was Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2.
Yes,
which is a great movie. I love that. And then Sleepaway Camp 2 were like ones that they watch all the time, and so it was probably one of those.
Who is your ultimate final girl?
You know, in recent years, I would say Sydney Prescott.
Yes.
I really didn't used to think so, but like just thinking more about her, especially in 4 and 5, like, fuck yeah, she's got it all. She's a badass bitch. And not only that, but she's like, she used her trauma to like help other people. You know, there was the one movie mm-hmm. where she was helped at a crisis line, and then yeah. I don't know. Yeah. She's just, yeah. I think the last movie like really solidified it. Like one of my favorite lines from that movie was like, "I'm Sydney Prescott. Of course, I have a fucking gun." You know,
I so love I
was
it.
Like, I was like, "Yeah, girl, that's right." So mm-hmm. probably her.
Excellent choice. How long would you last in a horror movie?
Not very long.
That was a quick answer.
I've never had much faith in myself in that regard. Well, it depends on what kind. If it was supernatural, that's maybe. Because I would believe it, and I would either leave or I would try to help out.
That's what I always say. If I were in a slasher, I wouldn't last very long because yeah. I'd trip over my own feet and then die.
Yeah. So. I'm not really in shape right now, so yeah. Running is, nah. Actually, this movie right here, like something like this, being around water, like that's my worst nightmare. Like if it was like a water situation, I'd be out.
There's that one scene where like somebody's trying to swim away from the shark, and I'm like, really? Do you really think you can outswim a shark?
No. I mean, there's many scenes. We'll get into it, but there's many scenes where I'm like, there's no way. Are you like an Olympian? Yeah. How long are you holding your breath? It makes no sense.
Yeah. All right. So the Letterboxd summary for Deep Blue Sea. Researchers on the undersea lab Aquatica have genetically altered the brains of captive sharks to develop a cure for Alzheimer's disease. But there's an unexpected side effect. Oh, side effects. Side effect. The sharks got smarter, faster, and more dangerous. After a big storm damages their remote research facility, they must fight for their lives. So it was directed by Rennie Harlan, who directed 1988's A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it was inspired by a shark attack that one of the screenwriters, Duncan Kennedy, from Australia, he witnessed a shark attack near his home when he was younger, started having these nightmares in which he was in a passageway with sharks that could read his mind. So he had that. Yeah, he had recurring nightmares about that, which is awful.
That's terrifying.
He wrote a spec script, which was bought by Warner Brothers in 1994 and went through several rewrites by several writers before its final draft was written by Duncan Kennedy, Donna Powers, and Wayne Powers. And Wayne Powers said that the draft that was first presented to them by Warner Brothers was much more of a high-tech action movie with like grenade launchers, military espionage. But he said they wanted their team to include more blue-collar types and not to have weapons to fight back, to play it more as a horror movie.
I was going to say the sharks had the grenade launchers because I would watch that.
Sure. They like have it attached to their fin. They're like, woo, let's go.
I would also watch that. Rennie Harlan really wanted to take the horror genre back to films like The Exorcist, Jaws, and The Shining versus a lot of the campy movies that kind of came out of the 80s and 90s. He was also really inspired by Alien, particularly in his casting. He didn't want audiences to know who would live and who would die because I believe that the only actor that was really like a name actor at the time was Samuel L. Jackson.
Wow.
I think so.
Filming began on August 3rd, 1998, and it was primarily shot at Fox's Baja Studios in Rosarito, Mexico. They reused some large water tanks that had been built for a movie in 1997. Any guesses what that movie was?
Titanic.
Titanic. Yeah. Oh, wow. Crazy.
Oh.
They spent about 8 months working on the animatronic sharks. And they said, Walt Conti, who was the head of the special effects team, said, the number one thing about capturing sharks is getting their energy. They're always cruising kind of slowly. Then they snap and just go with this incredible burst of energy. In that way, most of the time, sharks are somewhat lethargic. So probably our biggest challenge was replicating that speed and energy for those lunges. Also, a shark's jaws actually float in their skulls, which is crazy, giving them a specific kind of motion. As far as I know, we're the first animatronics team to totally mimic the multifaceted jaw of the shark.
Wow.
Shooting ended in Mexico. They headed to the Bahamas to shoot with real sharks. And there was one scene where Thomas Jane, who, while not the best actor in this movie, is certainly a himbo.
Hey, I love Thomas Jane. Stop.
Oh, I agree with you on the acting point. He's terrible.
But he got to shoot one scene with real sharks. And
cool.
They said that they shot that last so that if anything went wrong, he'd already shot the scene.
If he died, it'd be cool.
Yeah, isn't that dark?
That's pretty dark.
Wow.
As someone in production, you have to make sure you have all your boxes checked and all
all your people alive.
You're not gonna like put in like millions of dollars into a movie and then like the second day someone gets their leg bit off and then where are you?
That's very true. Very true. So we've already talked about two of the stars of the movie. So we talked about Thomas Jane and Samuel L. Jackson, but it also stars Saffron Burroughs, LL Cool J, who is my personal favorite in this movie.
Me too.
Absolutely.
Michael Rapaport, Stellan Skarsgård, who apparently like has an entire like cast of a play for children. Like he has eight children.
Oh my God. They're trying to do The Sound of Music? What's happening?
I knew there were a lot of Skarsgårds, but eight is a lot.
And I think three of them are actors. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're great. They're all good.
And Jacqueline McKenzie. So Samuel L. Jackson told the Las Vegas Sun that he was motivated to take the part because he watched a lot of monster pictures growing up. And he said, we would go home, someone would pretend to be Dracula or Frankenstein and chase us, and we would run from them. This was an opportunity to finally be in a movie like that and run away from something that's bigger and stronger with sharp teeth and claws. I got to say stuff like, look out, go this way, ah, ah, even though I didn't get to be that panicky.
It's kind of like his story for like why he wanted to be in Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah, it was called
Snakes on a Plane.
It was called Snakes on a Plane. Amazing.
Can you imagine being that, like, you know, being at that level of your career as an actor where you can just be like, I'm just going to pick this because of the name.
That sounds cool. Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There are two songs contributed by LL Cool J, Deepest Bluest.
Bluest. My head is like a shark's fin. Yeah.
That was good. And Say What, which we hear Deepest Bluest, I think, at the end of the movie. And then Say What, I think, is at one point throughout the movie. The budget was between $60 to $82 million, and the movie grossed over $165 million worldwide. It was released on July 28th, 1999, and not surprisingly, it received mixed reviews. Roger Ebert gave the film 3 out of 4 stars. He praised it as a skillful thriller, saying that Deep Blue Sea is essentially one well-done action sequence after another. It doesn't linger on the special effects. Some of the sharks look like cartoons, sacrilege, but it knows how to use timing, suspense, quick movement, and especially surprise. Kenneth Turin of the Los Angeles Times said it was an example of how expert action filmmaking and up-to-the-minute visual effects can transcend a workmanlike script and bring excitement to conventional genre material. My favorite.
I hear that kitty cat back there.
I know.
Yeah. Every time. Writing for the New York Times, this is probably my favorite review, even though it's kind of mean. It was described as a cut-rate Titanic, stripped of romance and historical resonance and fused with Jaws, shorn of mythic symbolism and without complex characters.
Wow.
It was also criticized as being an inferior imitation of Jurassic Park.
Hey, they're different. What the hell? They're completely different.
Yeah, they're totally different.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just kidding.
And Ian Nathan of the British magazine Empire gave the film 3 out of 5 stars, criticized its B-movie convention, stating that you're never entirely sure whether you're laughing at or with Deep Blue Sea.
Yes, you're doing both.
That's really accurate.
That's honestly why it's fun. Come on.
Yeah. And that's kind of the fun of B-movies, right? Like, this movie does not aspire to, like...
It's not aspiring to be anything more than a B-movie. Yeah.
Exactly. And because anytime I can bring up Stephen King, I will. This was the first movie that Stephen King saw after he was hit by a van and almost killed. He said he went in his wheelchair and loved every minute of it.
Yes.
Oh, yay. I loved it. I liked it.
That's what matters.
Exactly.
So we open on a catamaran out in the middle of the ocean, and we meet 4 young folks. They're just having a good time. They're listening to tunes. They're making out, you know, as you do on a catamaran in the middle of the ocean.
Middle of the ocean. Makes no sense. Yeah.
At night.
At night. Yeah.
Like dumbasses.
Exactly.
I'm surprised. Well, I already said there's going to be spoilers. I'm surprised they survive, really.
Yeah.
One of the girls feels something under the boat, but no one's super concerned. So the party continues until someone spills what is probably a $5 bottle of wine. And this is what triggers the shark to attack.
Maybe. It could just be like, ooh, look, it's supposed to look like blood. But
I just like to think that the shark is so smart. Yeah, but he's like, wine.
I wanted my Pinot tonight. Thanks, guys.
The shark starts to attack the boat. It knocks off the boom box, and that poor little teddy bear that you get the shot of it just like floating down through the water, sinking. And then it starts to headbutt the bottom of the boat, the shark, not the teddy bear.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. Anytime. To the horror of the boaters, the shark does crash through the floor, and the shark is just kind of chewing on the boat and the scenery. Both the couples end up in the water. One of the girls gets headbutted by her presumed boyfriend. The music gets more intense, and the shark circles back for them. They're struggling to get back in the boat, and we get our first shot of the shark POV that has this kind of like iris around it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then Thomas Jane, a.k.a. the Punisher, a.k.a. Carter, comes to the
You know what's kind of cool about this opening, though, is that it's, like, the total opposite of, like, the Jaws opening. Like, they're just, like, show the shark, and I kind of love that.
Exactly.
This whole movie does everything the total opposite of what you expect, and it starts, like, right here, I think.
Yeah, that's a good shout-out, because in Jaws, you don't see the shark for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're just like, no, this is a shark movie. Here's a shark.
Yeah, exactly. This is a Gen 1 Mako that has escaped from its pen from captivity, and supposedly, this is what I've read, because we know these sharks are supposed to be really, really smart, as we will continue to see in the movie. The theory is that the Mako was scouting the area to confirm that the waters were suitable for all three Super Makos to live in. So it attacked the boat so it could test its own hunting abilities and confirm that they could survive once they weren't being fed.
Okay.
Interesting. Interesting.
Or it was just bored.
Or it was just bored. And it's like, I want to get out. Exactly. The next day we see a helicopter landing on the roof of a skyscraper and out steps Dr. Susan McAllister, played by Saffron Burroughs.
The worst. I hate her.
She's visiting some bigwig executive who confronts her with the newspaper headline about the shark escapee. And she's basically, dude, no one was killed. Relax. And even if they were, sometimes you have to break a few eggs to make an omelet because they're working on a cure for Alzheimer's and they're so close to achieving it. And this is where we see Samuel L. Jackson, who is playing Russell Franklin, the president of the board of Chimera Pharmaceuticals, which has invested $200 million mostly because of the work that the doctor has been doing. This actually reminds me, and there's a few scenes that remind me of Jurassic Park. This one where, you know, the scene in Jurassic Park where they're like, well, you have to have an inspection before you open the park. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what this scene reminds me of, where they're like, yeah, you got to go.
Yeah, that's similar.
That's true.
And confirm that it's okay. He's like, we're about to pull funding, but she's like, do you know what it's like to watch somebody suffer with Alzheimer's? And pulls on his heartstrings. She asks for 48 hours to get them results before walking out. Her ploy works. I shouldn't say it's a ploy. It's very genuine. She and Russell head to the research facility. She's kind of badass. Like, she flies that plane.
Yeah.
You may think that now, but she won't be later.
I mean, she is. I don't love her, but she's pretty badass still.
Just very selfish. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
They discuss an incident that he was involved in, which we'll learn more about later, where there was an avalanche in the Alps in which he ended up being a bit of a hero. So he's been lauded for that. But there may be more to the story, as he's like, I didn't save all of them, all of the people involved in the avalanche. They approach the facility basically in the middle of nowhere. And he says, it looks like Alcatraz floats. And as they land, Carter and some unnamed workers are relocating a little tiger shark. And I only say little because the other sharks are so much larger than this poor little tiger shark.
Which I won't get into it, but there's a whole thing with sharks in this movie. I love sharks. And Makos are not this huge. So there's like a whole thing with, they don't even look like that.
I was wondering that.
It's a whole thing. Like, and their jaws also, like, the teeth are more similar to a great white, like how large they are and how they come out like that. That's like a great white thing. So yeah, there's just a whole thing with shark inaccuracy in this movie.
I was honestly wondering that because I was like, 40-foot shark, is that right? That seems kind of huge.
No, they're way too huge. And they have like a different shape, kind of. They're a little more like pointier than they are
I assumed that they not only like messed with the size of their brain, but they just did all kinds of genetic tests on them.
No, and, like, I think they did. I think that's why they're bigger. Yeah.
Funny thing, though, like you said, at one point they refer to the shark being 45 feet, but apparently they actually were only 26 feet long. Because they wanted to outdo Steven Spielberg's shark, which was 25 feet.
And so, yeah, the shark in Jaws is 25.
Oh, that's so funny.
The next character we meet is marine biologist Janice Higgins, and she's going to walk Russell through the facility. Russell, meanwhile, notices Carter swimming in the water, and the shark starts to swim towards him. Russell is naturally concerned, as I feel like most people would be, but no one else is. They're just like, eh, whatever. Just another day, Aquatica. And we get this cool shark wrangling as Carter grabs onto its dorsal fin and pulls something out of its mouth.
I mean, it definitely reminded me of... Oh my God, you guys, I'm so sorry. It definitely reminded me of the George of the Jungle with the horse.
Wait, what?
Was not expecting you to say that.
Do you guys know the scene that I'm talking about?
Yes, I do know. I do know what you mean.
He's like dancing with the horse in the field, and all the women are like, "Oh my god!" It's definitely I can't. You know, it gave me George of the Jungle vibes.
That makes me miss Brendan Fraser because I used to love him so much.
He's the best. He went through a really hard time. He went through some trauma. He went through some sexual assault, but he's back, baby. He was just in something. Like, really recently. He started working again really recently.
Oh, yay. I'm so
glad.
I haven't seen it yet, but it's a horror. I think it's like a thriller.
Oh, my gosh.
I want to say he plays like a shut-in or something.
Oh, he rides that line super well, which is why The Mummy is like perfect. Because
The Mummy is perfection. I love that movie.
The Mummy is a perfect movie, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. So this poor shark had a license plate in its mouth, and it's actually the same one that is found in the tiger shark in Jaws.
Oh my gosh, really?
I didn't even think of that.
That's very fun. I love that.
So Russell is introduced to Carter, and Russell is like fanboying because he's like, I can't believe you did that. That was incredible. And Carter is very nonchalant. He's like, they don't like the taste of us very much. Which also, within the first 10 minutes, 15 minutes of Deep Blue Sea 2, somebody says, they don't like the taste of us very much.
Nice.
It's like recycling lines. Excellent. Carter's clearly got a bit of a chip on his shoulder, saying that sharks only bite people because they think their victims are fat little seals or a rich suit. And then he walks away. Russell's like, is that the shark that escaped? But Janice is like, no, that's just the normal shark. And then she proceeds to show him the three test sharks, who she calls gliding monsters.
Which, like, she's a marine biologist. And she sounds like she doesn't like sharks, you know? It's like, yeah, you love
messed
them?
Up.
And if you don't, if you're a marine biologist, you're like, I just want to stick to dolphins. Don't work at Aquatica.
Yeah, fuck off then. Exactly. It's a shark place.
Like, did she get mugged by a shark once? Like, what happened?
I have a question. Why don't any of the sharks have names? Why do they just call them like Gen 1 and Gen 2?
I think that's the whole point is that they're very science based and they're not thinking of them like animals, or at least some of them aren't.
They should have names though, don't you think?
I agree. I will often name, like when I'm doing a podcast and doing my notes, I'll name things that don't have names. Like we did an episode on American Werewolf in London, and I named the woman that owns the bar, I called her Gladys because she reminded me of my grandmother. Gladys, but you never know her name.
So. Can we please name one of these sharks Gladys? Because that's amazing.
Yes, Gladys okay. is a great name. They're all females, so they all, yeah.
Especially because they're all females. It works. Gladdy, good old Gladdy.
There you go.
Okay. So we'll name the third shark, the one that survives the longest.
The last one. Okay. Yeah. That's Gladys.
So this is really not where you want to be when a storm hits, but we learn that one is on the way as tower operator Brenda announces. And next up, we see Dr. Jim Whitlock, played by the fertile Stellan Skarsgård. And Janice calls him the most brilliant man ever. But I got to say, I'm with Russell when he's like, how brilliant can he be? He's peeing into the wind.
Yep. This is also
true.
Some of us watch this together, and this is one of the only things I feel like he's good in. He's really good at being evil people, usually, in movies. Like in The Glass House, which is a thriller, he's really scary in that. And he's evil in a lot of things he's in. So it's nice to see him be good for once.
I feel like that's a recent development, though. Because I feel like when he started out, he was kind of a good guy.
He was in Good Will Hunting.
Dad character always, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true.
He's a babe. He's definitely like a cutie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Carter is currently preparing for a worst case scenario as he loads up more tranquilizers into his spear gun. And in walks engineer Tom Scoggs, to his friends. Carter gives him a hard time, saying he should have closed the pen last night and the shark wouldn't have gotten out. And Scoggs is like, I did close the pen. Jane and Russell continue through the facility. She's giving them the rundown. There's half a mile of catwalks. There's titanium fencing around the lagoon and pens. There are three sublevels. And as Russell's getting his tour, Susan and Jim have a conversation about their research. She asks if he has dosed the Gen 2 with the serum. He's like, they're ready, but we're not ready. We're skipping 2 months and 3 rounds of preliminary trials, which not a good idea.
Not good.
She insists they have no choice. So, and we'll talk about it later, but is Susan the villain in the movie?
I think she is, but that's me. I don't like her.
Sort of.
They're all kind of assholes. They're all kind of not great. But I mean, like even like the
Well, LL Cool J is not a villain. He's the only one.
He is the hero of this piece. He is amazing. But even like the Skarsgård and the little blonde doctor.
Yeah, they're kind of dicks.
They seem like very invested in making this all work at any cost. She obviously is set up to be the bad guy because of the way that they like shoot her and like bring her in, you know, like just like everything, like is supposed to make you think that she's the bad guy, but I don't think she's the only bad guy. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
It
could be more than one.
Yeah.
And it's definitely not the sharks, because it's not on them that they're
It's not on the sharks. they're just living their lives.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
Trying to be sharks.
She does let the one shark go, like, after he attacks Stellan Skarsgård. But then after that, she's very much about, like, yeah, we need to kill these sharks because they suck. She even kills one herself. Sorry, spoiler. So,
yeah.
And.
But she's also the reason that everybody dies.
I know. Right. She really is. So she's kind of, she's a part villain, sort of. Yeah.
I think she's the misguided villain. She has very good intentions, right? Like, she really wants to save all
these
people.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. Yeah.
But she goes about it the wrong way. And I think I would say that Stellan Skarsgård's character is equally as culpable because he knows what they're together. Doing, right? Like,
yeah.
And they clearly said that they skipped all these steps that they should have done. So
I don't know that the marine biologist is as... Janice is quite as guilty, because she looks shocked at one point that they've when Susan says they broke the Harvard compact. And she looks shocked, like she's like, I can't believe you would do that.
She doesn't seem villainy. I don't think she's aware of some of it.
Carter and Russell run into each other again, and Russell is trying to make conversation, and he's clearly an adventurer. He's into mountain climbing, he's into wreck diving, he's into shopping at Tommy Hilfiger.
Oh my gosh, I think he's, I love how preppy he is in this.
I know.
He's not preppy in
the
anything
glasses,
else.
Glasses, man, so kill me.
Yeah, just walked out of Banana Republic, I got a sale, guys.
Totally. Look at my fancy sweater. Carter isn't buying it, though. He's very suspicious, and he's like, you're the man, right? And he's like, yeah, I'm the man. He's like, well, you, I know you have a file on me. And sure enough, we learn that Carter has spent time in prison for smuggling. So the tension is very thick between the two of them. Carter assures him that he's sticking to the straight and narrow. He's like, I know I've got a good gig at Aquatica. I'm not going to risk that. But as it turns out, smuggling might be safer.
Right. Seriously. Can I say what I love about this scene? So many water references in the script. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's like, on this whole cat and mouse thing, don't float and I don't make waves. Like, seriously, dude.
That's why the script is terrible and he's the worst actor.
He's just working with what he's got, Katie.
He's just doing his job, yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Once Russell is somewhat appeased, we finally get to meet the best characters in the whole movie. Preacher and his pet parrot, Bird. You're right. I'm kidding.
Yeah, Bird is the best. I love Bird.
I love Bird. Yeah.
Bird and Preacher have a very contentious relationship. Despite Bird's constant insults like fat butt and dickhead, Preacher genuinely cares about this little dude. It's so good.
Very ironic, too, to have a bird underwater.
Exactly. It's pretty funny. I think they did that on purpose.
I know. I love it.
It is feeding time, but not for the people. So Carter swims down this long fenced-in corridor as Skogs drops in the tiger shark. I will say it took me so many viewings to realize that they brought the tiger shark in to feed the bigger sharks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen it so many times. And it wasn't until I watched it today that I was like, oh, they're feeding him to the sharks.
Yeah.
Also, every time I'm like, he does not look safe in there.
Yeah. He says at one point that they'll only eat other sharks.
Yeah.
And it's vicious. Like, the Makos destroy that little shark.
I know. Mm-hmm. Goodbye, buddy. We'll miss you.
Oh.
Gladys was hungry, okay?
Yeah. Gladys was hungry.
Those might be her babies. They might be doing her
babies.
Susan is called to the surface level when Brenda tells her they have a bit of a situation, and she walks out onto the platform. It's dark, it's creepy, and suddenly two flares go off, and surprise, it's a birthday party for her. There is some bad dancing happening during this party. Yes.
There is
so bad. There's also some bad outfits in this scene.
Yes. But I mean, like, it's 1990s.
It's all that, like, 90s. Yeah, exactly.
Russell at this point meets Preacher, who tells him that black men have enough ways to get killed without climbing mountains and getting caught in avalanches.
I love that line.
I love that part.
One of the best ones. Yeah.
He's like, leave that shit to the white people.
I love it.
We see a little hint of romantic tension between Carter and Susan as he wishes her a happy birthday. And he's like, one day maybe we'll go out for a beer. But she's all business. She's not even hanging out at her own party. She's actually off on her own until Carter shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Jim and Janice, meanwhile, are nerding out about sharks to Russell. And I was like, this would be Katie at this party. I mean that with all love, Katie.
I just feel bad that people think that they're these horrible creatures. And it's like, it's their home, guys. You're the ones that are getting in there. Of course, they're going to be like, what are you? Let me bite you. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not their fault that we're fucking tasty. Like, you know, it's...
I know, I can't help it. It's not their fault that everybody looks like a seal to them. They don't know what it is.
They start to tell Russell how they increase the shark's brain mass, which will allow them to harvest more protein, and then they can use this protein to reactivate human brain cells. But how, Russell wonders, did you do this without genetic tampering? Mm-hmm. And when Janice says that, well, that's illegal.
We lied.
Meanwhile, Carter is expressing his concerns about the sharks to Susan. He's like, this is where he says they'll only eat other sharks. They're hunting in packs. They're super aggressive. They're just not acting like normal sharks. She, at this point, threatens him, saying they're all out of a job if the tests tomorrow don't work. And when she, like, basically says to him, you're a good man, but, you know, you have that pesky little criminal past.
Yeah, she's a bee here.
He should rescind that invitation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's concerned that the Gen 1 that attacked that 25-foot boat the night before actually cleared the 8-foot fences. So Scoggs has raised the fences even higher. The storm is approaching fast. It's bringing gale force winds and huge ocean swells. But that's not going to keep the team from their experiments. So Brenda radios them. She's updating them about the storm and advises that they should use the pen and lagoon monitors as there probably isn't much visibility in the water.
Poor Brenda.
Once again, Carter swims down the tunnel, spear gun in hand. Would you ever go shark diving?
I actually want to because it's my worst fear. Mm-hmm. I either want to do that or I want to do, if you go to certain places in South Africa, you can be in one of those big cages but only be in there with a few people. So mm-hmm. it's like a nice wide one and you're kind of still on top of the water, and that one sounds safer to me. So maybe that instead.
Not one of those little cages where you can only fit like two people in it.
Yeah, it's like a phone booth sized cage.
Yeah,
I don't want to pull a, what is it called, that Mandy Moore
47 movie, meters down.
Yes, I don't want to. I don't right. want that. No thanks. I'm good.
Oh, that's a good one too. No one mentioned that. That's a good one.
It is.
That is a good one.
I thought about it. Yeah,
the sequel's pretty good too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I never. I liked that one. I liked it.
Suddenly, two of the sharks ram the tunnel from each side before backing up, swimming backwards as Carter raises his gun. Which is a little alarming because, A, they recognize the gun and they swim backwards, which is something that sharks can't do.
Yep.
So just because they got smarter, they can do something that they're not, like, physically able to do?
For all we know,
is that the explanation here? Yeah, I don't know. Exactly.
Yeah. It's not that they couldn't swim backwards before because they just couldn't figure out how to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. That's right. A good point.
Right. You're like, guess what we've known all this time, guys? Start showing
just
up.
Got to be smarter.
They're like, look at this tiger shark.
I'll show you my stripes. I had to.
And it just gets worse. The sharks start taking out the cameras, which also, again, I know they're smarter, but how do they even know what cameras are?
It makes no sense.
But the team now can't see what's happening. So the lights in the tunnel also go out. If I'm Carter, I would be terrified.
Yeah.
But no, he actually heads out of the tunnel and is swimming in open water with the sharks now.
What an idiot. Oh, my God.
He has Why? Too much confidence. Yeah.
Who tells him later on that he has like big brass balls? Because seriously, like,
I think that's Scoggs.
Carter, though, he tricks the shark, taking off his diving gear and kind of putting it up against the fence so it attacks that instead of him.
Smart.
This allows him to tranquilize the shark before bringing her up to the platform in the wet.
How does he get the shark from wherever it is in the water onto the stupid platform?
That was definitely one of my questions. I was like,
I've been thinking about this since 1999. I don't know how he did it.
That's a really good question.
Yeah, it's like, you're not going to drag this, like, how many
impossible
like,
he
ton
can't,
animal
he can't, yeah.
yeah
you can't
he's like, let me just casually float up with this beast in the water. I'm
just like carrying it on his shoulder.
Oh, man.
Jim here shows some hubris, which never works out well when he responds to Russell's comment, what in God's creation with not his, ours?
Yes.
When Russell sees the shark.
So he jinxed the whole movie. Okay.
100%. Everything would have gone smoothly if he didn't say that.
Yeah. Everything would have been fine.
Exactly. After doing some diagnostics to ensure that the shark is okay, Susan approaches. She is ready to start the experiment. And we get a little bit of a jump scare when the shark rears up for a moment, startling everyone before they realize that she's still out.
Isn't that what he says?
Yeah.
This is like a really tense scene because they've got this shark in this little pool, and Susan inserts this very long needle into the shark's brain, extracting some liquid protein. They then insert it into some inactive brain tissue taken from an Alzheimer's patient. And we see the computer screen. We see the neurons firing as they interact with the protein complex. So it worked. Their experiment was a success. Russell and Susan are excitedly talking about what's next, and Jim relaxes with a smoke.
Okay, one of my favorite like little moments in the scene before that, though, is when he puts the cigarette in his mouth and Janice looks over him and is just like, really? And then like when this happens, it's like, this is like his punishment for smoking, I think. Yeah. This is like an anti-smoking scene. Yes.
I will say I like the, even though she's, I don't like her as a character, the doctor, the main doctor, has a really cool voice. It's so deep, and I feel like you can hear it a lot in this scene when she's like, the protein complex. It's like really deep. I can't do it, clearly.
The accent, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jim crouches down next to the platform, and he congratulates the shark, saying, you did it. Mm. Just as the shark regains consciousness, taking off his arm in one swift bite.
It looks really real, too. They did it really well.
They did a really good job. Carter is still in the pool with the shark, who is now thrashing around, but he manages to get out. And while everyone else tends to Jim, Carter goes for a rather powerful looking gun.
And by the way, everyone tends to Jim, but you know how fucking long it takes him to get a tourniquet on his arm?
I know.
Like, so long. And listen, like, maybe it's just because I've literally been watching Grey's Anatomy. I've been doing a Grey's Anatomy rewatch, so I've been watching way too much hospital shit right now. But like, I sat there and I was like, somebody put pressure, somebody put a tourniquet, and they're just like, and I was like, what? It takes until like, I think Samuel L. Jackson takes his belt off and like puts it on there. And I was just
kind
like,
of in shock because they're used to being in like labs and used to like being, you know, science nerds.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's true, but yeah, somebody really dropped the ball there. I'm just saying I would be pissed if I was Skarsgård, all right?
Well, he's going to be real pissed very soon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's only going to get worse for him.
Gets worse. Yeah.
I like how this all plays out in slow motion, though. It's kind of a cool little scene with booming, like, horror movie music, like, behind it. It, like, makes it so intense.
They do that a couple of times, don't they, with the slow motion? It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Susan's not willing to let him kill her pet project, so she drops the platform, releasing the shark back into the water.
He still could have shot it.
He still could have, for sure. Yeah.
It was, like, just below the surface of the water.
Maybe it has genetic camouflaging now.
He couldn't see it, like, as soon as it was under the water, like, 2 seconds later.
He lost track of a 30-foot, 40-foot shark, yeah.
Invisible sharks.
As they race to the surface to meet the helicopter and the paramedics they have called, we see how bad the storm outside has become. And it's bad. Water is crashing over the walkways. Carter still manages to grab hold of the cable, and they manage to attach the stretcher carrying Jim. Apparently, when they were doing this scene, the waves are supposed to rush in front of them, behind them, but at one point, 3 tons of water got thrown on them by accident, and actually got swept towards the cargo bays, and everybody thought they were going to actually go in the water.
Oh, fuck.
And they didn't have safety harnesses on, so.
Thanks.
Samuel L. Jackson said he thought it was pretty funny when he saw it in the final film, saying, oh, they kept that.
Oh, yeah. That's hilarious.
So the others just managed to get back inside, but things are not going well with the rescue. The winch gets caught and then eventually unspools rather quickly. Jim goes crashing into the ocean.
Literally the most terrifying thing ever. He's like helpless thing attached to something in the water.
That's like dangling bait on a fishing rod,
literally.
Really.
Yeah, yeah, literally.
Yeah, I thought we were going to get like a Jurassic World moment where the shark was going to like jump out and get it. And I was a little bummed that we didn't get that.
We get that later.
Also, I don't think Makos do that, but great whites can come out of the water. Okay, I'm done. Sorry.
The helicopter is pulled into the tower as one of the sharks pulls that stretcher through the water. So we have in seconds lost Jim. Well, no, actually, we haven't lost Jim yet. Brenda and the helicopter pilots.
I feel so bad for Brenda, but at least her death was quick.
Yeah, Brenda was great.
But fire and water, these are like the worst possible deaths outside of sharks mm-hmm. being in there, which makes it worse.
That's like the three worst. Yeah, that's like the three worst possible deaths all in one place.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Thanks, Aquatica. You're real cute.
There are mass explosions. The entire facility is rocked. And in the wet lab, they realize that all the systems are down as Janice is freaking out. And she's like, where is he? Where is he? And Russell notices something coming towards them through the big plate glass window. These sharks are so mean. They're very malicious. It is Jim. He is still alive and attached to the stretcher, which is in the shark's mouth as it swims towards that window.
It's the coolest shot. It's so cool.
Yeah.
The shark literally tosses him at the window, and the window slowly begins to crack.
They look at it for way, way too long.
I was just yes! going to say this. How long does it take you to be like, can I move my feet yet?
Yeah.
Man.
Like literally a chunk of glass bounces on the ground in front of them and lands in the like, pool. What? They still...
Even if I saw it like coming towards the glass, I'd be like, I'm gone. Bye.
Exactly.
Now, there was a deleted scene that made it very obvious that Janice and Jim were in a relationship. And it is also revealed that Janice is pregnant with their child.
Oh,
but the scene was cut because Renny Harlin didn't feel right killing off a pregnant woman.
Yeah, you don't do that.
That was a good call. That would be fucked.
Water crashes into the wet lab as everyone races to get out. And they manage to get out of the wet lab. They close the door behind them. I feel like that's a lot of water pressure. So I don't know how they managed to get that door closed. But movie magic. So.
Exactly. I feel like there's a lot of that in this.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing Carter's good for is muscles. And that's about it.
So. Opening doors. Yeah. That's his thing.
He does open a lot of doors.
It's a door movie for him. Doors and sharks.
Scoggs tells them there's no way up, so they have to plot another escape route. Meanwhile, Preacher and Bird are walking through a hallway. Well, Bird is sitting on Preacher's shoulder.
Can you imagine? This is like, I'm like a giant bird just like walking with like an army vest on next to her.
I was just picturing it on a little leash, like walking beside him.
That would be cute. So cute.
That would be adorable. I'm sure that Bird would have some words about that leash, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Preacher is seeing some bad signs. There are leaks happening. There's some weird rumbling sounds. There's explosions. And at this point, Bird abandons him, flying off on his own. As Preacher starts to head up a stairway, that bird has no loyalty.
Nope.
Even after, like, he gave him, like, whipped cream earlier. Like,
I know.
This bird's living the life.
He's probably afraid. He's like, fuck this. Bye. Sorry.
I maintain that whipped cream scene was just a little too intimate.
I don't know why you think it's intimate. It's the funniest.
I maintain that it was just a little too intimate for my taste. Okay. It was very intense. I'm just saying.
You've never given your one of your cats some food off of your finger.
Yeah, I totally have, but it's different somehow. or maybe LL just like oozes sexuality. Maybe that's what it is.
He is pretty hot in this.
That's
movie.
Definitely
There's
what
something
it is.
About
yeah.
him.
He actually, totally is.
Yeah.
Water comes rushing down the stairs in the stairway that Preacher is heading up, knocks him down. It carries him back down the corridor. The others are heading back to the wet lab when they hear something banging against the door. And Scoggs is like, Preach? But the rivets in the door start popping, so clearly it's not Preacher. And they are forced to run as water once again comes crashing in. At this point, we see that the explosions, we get a shot of the surface level of the facility, and we see this gaping hole in the facility's exterior wall, and another shark swims inside. Preacher has managed to get to his feet again. He is looking for Bird. He finds him. Bird still hasn't changed. He's calling him all kinds of names.
The best.
Their relationship remains constant.
That's how you know it's a best friend with the mockery. Exactly. You know.
Meanwhile, Russell wants to know if that was a shark that broke through that door. He is done with Susan, though, when she goes to answer, and he looks to Carter for answers. Carter says he suspects so. With the size of the Mako, she would be able to slam into that door really, really hard. Russell's like, these sharks are after us. And he's like, what did you do to the sharks? Yep. And this is where Susan comes clean. She says, we violated the Harvard Compact and used genetic engineering to make their brains larger, which resulted in the sharks getting smarter.
Dumbass.
She's also not apologetic at any point.
That's what I mean. She doesn't give a shit. She's like, we're fine. We're going to be fine.
She does admit to it. Yeah. But she doesn't say like, sorry for all this. Yeah.
No, that's true. She doesn't.
Yeah. Like this. If no. She's the John Hammond of this movie, like she he at least realized like, what have we done at some point? You know, yeah, like
John Hammond had more of a soul sooner on.
But... yeah.
She still insists we would save so many people with this research. Carter feels personally betrayed and tells her that she has knocked them all to the bottom of the food chain. Preacher is still wading through the water. It is almost armpit deep and it is cold. Like his teeth are chattering. However, he gets a little bit of comfort when a Playboy floats by him and he prays to get out of there. I'm guessing because there are still boobs for him to see. That's just my theory.
Yep.
It reminds him. He takes a second to look at the magazine before he realizes that a shark is swimming towards him. And he takes off. So this is the first scene where I'm like, how are you going to outswim this shark?
Yep.
But he doesn't really have to outswim it. He's kind of running because he's not fully underwater.
Yeah, but you're still not going to outrun a shark in water either. So
you run so much slower in water.
I think the shark is also so much smarter that it's playing with them a little bit. And it's like, I can take my time.
Maybe. Yeah.
He takes off. He runs back into the kitchen where he grabs a frying pan for protection.
Honestly, what else are you going to do? Just grab whatever's there.
I mean, there are knives at least in the kitchen. But the shark swims past the kitchen. For now, anyways. The others are trying to make it to the sub, which they can use to get out of the facility. But unfortunately, the sub has been wrecked and it is out of the water. Preacher, however, not out of the water yet, and manages to climb up a shelf as the shark swims into the room. So Bird startles him as he flies from the top shelf. But Preacher still tries to reach Bird as he lands on a floating pot. No. And he calls himself Daddy. He's like, come to Daddy. No. Do you not see Granddaddy's face?
Is that also sexual for you, Ari?
Depends on my mood. I don't know.
Unfortunately, he is not able to reach Bird before the shark eats him.
Why the bird? Ugh.
I don't think that bird is going to satisfy that shark.
It's like barely an appetizer.
Like, I think maybe he is just playing with it. He's like, I know you care about this bird.
He also is fluttering. And if there's splashing and stuff in the water, it could have been like the fluttering or like the splashing, because that actually attracts sharks too.
The shark still wants a piece of Preacher. And when the shelf he is standing on falls over, Preacher has no choice but to enter the gas oven.
The best.
Luckily, it's a huge commercial size oven. So like he's not super cramped up in there. Back at the sub, Scoggs tells Russell that the explosion didn't move it. So these sharks are legit evil masterminds.
Yep.
It is now on to plan. I have plan B in my notes, but I feel like at this point it's plan D or E. I'm not sure. Janice thinks they should dive down and swim back up to the surface, see who makes it to the top. I don't think she's 100% serious, though.
Yeah. She's losing her mind because she's doing that laugh thing where she's like, let's try it.
Russell has no time for the bickering and has found wetsuits that will help them fight hypothermia in the water.
Sorry, I'm just anticipating what's coming.
Yes, and the most unflattering thing you can put on your body, but whatever, you need to survive.
Unless you're Saffron Burroughs, she looks pretty good in it.
That's true. Her and Carter look good.
They wear the wetsuits well.
I feel like both of them would look good in whatever they wear. Back in the kitchen, the shark has somehow managed to turn the oven on.
With its nose.
Yes, because in this entirely flooded kitchen, like that pilot light's still going to fucking work. Like, what?
I think that's
so unless
right
that shark like pulls out a lighter.
I love it so much. So funny.
Luckily, Preacher has an axe and he just begins hacking away at the top of the oven and manages to make it into the upper oven just as the shark breaks through the door. So the shark is distracted at the oven. Preacher dives over him. and swims through the other end of the kitchen. I wouldn't have
been able to do that.
Right, and somehow the shark doesn't notice.
Well, he's busy trying to get in.
This hyper, like, intelligent shark has no fucking clue that this just, like, giant man just, like, jumped over it, like, casually.
I do love how he's talking about how he's stuck in there. He's like, I see the irony. I love that.
I know, I love that. Talking to
himself. So funny.
He is ready to get vengeance for Bird, and Preacher whips out his lighter and says, you ate my bird, before throwing the lighter toward the shark.
Well, also, like, the shark turns around, like, before that.
He's like, what did you say to me?
These rooms are not big enough also for, like, these sharks to, like, make all these maneuvers that they show them do, you know?
True. Very true.
Especially when the shark is, like, as massive as it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's already 40 feet long. That's, like, as big as the room, isn't it?
Yep, that's true.
With the amount of gas in the air, this causes a huge explosion, killing the shark as Preacher manages to escape. The others feel the explosion as they continue to discuss what their next option is. And Scoggs breaks it down. He's like, there is no way we can swim up to the surface and outswim the sharks. And I think he says, I can't remember the timelines, but he actually, like, he's like, this is how fast the average shark swims. This is how fast the average human swims. There's no way we can do this.
Yep.
The average human is 2 feet per second, and the average shark is 50 feet per second, I think he says.
Yeah. Holy moly. Listeners, remember that the next time you try to outswim a shark.
You absolutely cannot outswim a shark.
Instead, he suggests they take the maintenance ladder that goes all the way up to the surface. That sounds like a perfect idea, except that they don't know what the surface level is like, and any damage to that level could cause all the water pressure from the pool to come crashing in. At this point, everyone is just bickering, so it is time for Russell to stand up and give a pep talk. The best scene in the whole movie.
Yep.
It gets me giddy every single time I watch it. I get so excited.
Russell's standing by the pool. He starts by saying, if you think water's fast, you should see ice. And we learn that it took them a week to climb out from the avalanche, and that eventually they turned on each other, murdering two of the survivors, so that out of the seven people that survived the avalanche, only five of them walk away. This is Samuel L. Jackson at his finest.
100%. Yep. Yeah, it is.
So good.
He's amping up. He's like, we're going to pull together. We're going to find a way out of here. But it's a little too late for Russell to find a way out of anything as one of the sharks surfaces and drags him into the pool.
The angle of that shot is so perfect. It's like an extreme close-up on his face and then just like, shark grabs him. It's the best.
So good. It was the best surprise. The first time I watched it, I was like, oh, shit.
It was amazing.
The water below quickly turns red, and we actually see the two remaining sharks sharing a meal.
Yep.
Now, there were apparently rumors that Samuel L. Jackson didn't enjoy making the movie, and that's why his character was killed off halfway during filming.
Oh.
But he was initially offered the role of Preacher, but his management didn't like the idea of him playing a chef. And they're like, no. So
what?
The role of Russell Franklin was actually created
just because
for
of
him
being a chef? That's so weird.
Apparently.
But apparently he's going to be on a snake-ridden plane later, and that's okay.
Yeah. The role of Russell Franklin was created specifically for him. Hmm. And Jackson stated that Harlan told him, now you're going to be the richest man in the world, and you're going to have the greatest scene in the movie, and it's going to be a shock to everyone.
That's very true. That's very true.
Have you guys seen the other Renee Harlan movie with Sam Jackson? Well, and Kiss Goodnight?
Oh, no.
No,
that
I have
that movie
not.
Is amazing. You have to watch that.
Oh.
Gina Davis is like a badass action star in it. Yeah, it's awesome.
Oh, I love her.
Ooh.
He was also inspired by Alien and the death of Tom Skerritt in Alien because they were both kind of the natural leaders of the groups. So everybody was kind of shocked, including the survivors are like, what do we do now? Both were at the time the best known actor in the cast. So it was kind of a Alfred Hitchcock, Janet Leigh thing where we're like, we're going to kill off the most famous person in the movie. And so after watching the scene with an audience for the first time, Harlan said that the scene paid off for the entire movie because he heard the audience screaming in horror and fear, probably also laughing. Like, let's be honest.
It's got to be both.
Amazing. Scoggs is done at this point. He's like, I am not moving from this spot. I'm going to stay here. And Carter has to remind him that the facility is eventually going to collapse and he doesn't want to be there for that. So that's enough to motivate him to move. Time to try the maintenance ladder. There's a brief second of relief where they're like, oh, we're good. but it doesn't last too long because it turns out there is structural damage on the surface and water comes rushing into the chamber. Scoggs and Carter once again manage to shut the door, preventing more water from rushing in, but now fiery debris is raining down on them.
So cool.
These sharks are determined and they're trying to come through the door, this door now. Carter realizes the water will continue to surge, which is basically a shark elevator service. So
it is.
He decides to go to level two. He's going to open that door and he's going to force the water to run the
doors,
off there.
See? He opens the water doors.
Yeah.
He also falls down a lot in this movie.
He does.
Right. Count the number of times he falls down and the number of times he opens doors or closes them.
That'd be a good
that
shot.
Is a drinking game.
That's exactly. Yeah.
You'd be in the hospital. You can't drink every time you open
maybe,
the door.
Okay, well, maybe sips or something.
Yeah, that reminds me when Katie and I went to Vancouver, we made a Scream drinking game.
We did. It was very fun.
What was it?
Oh, gosh. I don't remember all the details, but there was a lot. Every time, I think there was like every time they say Sydney was definitely one of them, which was insane. Every time there's like a death, I think there was a couple or like a shot, like a bigger drink. I think there was some like every time someone screams, obviously. We had a lot of really specific nice. Ones too that were funny.
I think there was any time there was another horror movie reference.
Yes, because there's a lot of them. We had that as one. Yeah.
And that's probably why we can't remember a lot of the details of the drinking game.
There was a lot of, okay, get it.
I wonder yes. why.
Yeah. Carter has a narrow miss with a shark, but he manages to make it back onto the ladder. And there is a whole lot of structural damage to the facility, though. And the ladder snaps, basically forming a bridge between the two walls of the shaft. Janice has fallen into the water. She is begging Carter to save her.
Scary as hell.
He's an absolute beast. He is like hanging upside down from the ladder mm-hmm. as he tries to like grab her. She goes under, mm-hmm. but reemerges in a shark's mouth.
It's one of my favorite shots. It's
I
so
love it.
Scary.
It's a great yeah. shot. Yeah.
So where do they go from here? There's a door above them, but it's out of reach. Something is banging against that door as well. So given the sharks and their passion for crashing into doors, I'd be a little hesitant to go through it, even if they could reach it. But no, it is Preacher to the rescue. So this is the first time Preacher actually interacts with another human being.
Oh, you're right.
I know, right?
He helps them to safety, and he learns that they are all that's left of the Aquatica crew. Well, they made it to level one, so that's good news. They can take the stairs the rest of the way. But as Preacher knows from experience, those stairs are flooded. So Carter's like, we're only 60 feet from the surface, and Scoggs comes up with a backup plan. They can drain the water from one of the stairways, and he repeats his line from his first scene when he's like, who are you going to trust? That's right, you trust me. They enter Janice's room looking for supplies, specifically batteries for their huge flashlight. She was a healthy girl. She had to have batteries for her thing. I love that despite Preacher's reaction, there is literally no judgment in Scoggs' comment. He's not like...
Yeah.
It's like, surely she has one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Carter raids her medicine cabinet. He puts oil on his wound so the sharks don't smell the blood. And Susan tries to make amends, saying she couldn't have done what she's done without him.
At the same time, she's not apologizing.
So Scoggs and Carter are going to head to the wet lab to drain the stairwell. And while they swim through the flooded facility, Susan leaves Preacher behind to get her research data because she doesn't want all these deaths to be in vain. Carter swims into the wet lab. Like, how long can he hold his breath?
Oh, my
it's
God.
Insane.
It's ridiculous in this scene.
It's
how long he holds his breath. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how long do you think you could hold your breath for underwater?
Like, not even a minute.
2 seconds. Yeah. Yeah, like, no.
Yeah. I'm, like, lucky if 30 can even happen. I don't right. know how long it can.
Do you guys do that thing, though, when you watch a movie where if someone goes underwater yes. like that, you, like, start holding
oh,
breath?
Yeah. I usually, yeah. I didn't totally do it this do. Time, but I usually do that to see how long I can. Yeah.
Maybe I'm better now because I quit smoking.
And I know he's trained and everything, so that's definitely part of it. But like, God, it's a long time.
He comes face to face with Jim's corpse.
Oh,
it's so awful.
Gross.
Preacher finds a video camera in Janice's room and records a final message saying that he loved the pulpit and he loved the bottle. We also learn that his real name is Sherman Dudley. And he says, what message do I have for you? And you think he's going to go off on this, like, mm-hmm. you know, deep emotional speech. But no. He gives
you love this.
His recipe for the perfect omelet.
And I wanted to hear more.
I love how he goes, this is a mistake.
I love the way that he describes it.
He's so
cute. In the wet lab, Scoggs and Carter must move some equipment around before they can gain access to the generator. And Scoggs gives the thumbs up just as he gets slammed by a shark and bitten in half.
The twitching way that they leg. Make
his foot twitch, oh my God. I notice it every time and it's so gross.
The best. Like,
also, I bet that would really happen because of your, like, you know, your limbs moving and stuff when you're, ugh, gross.
Love it. Love it.
I love it. It's awful and I love it.
It is awful. And I also.
Also, how did he not die with all of this? Like, you know, all the shock he gets with these two deaths, like of choking, sucking in water. Like, how are you not dying? I don't know.
He grabs a quick breath of air before swimming for the door. And as a shark approaches, he manages to get it open.
Another open door. See?
And is washed into the hallway, managing to make his way back to level one where Preacher helps him out of the water. Mm-hmm. And they have a moment for Scoggs before Carter realizes that Susan isn't there. Meanwhile, Susan is headed to her room where she retrieves her files.
This is my favorite scene.
This is really good.
It's a cool scene.
She has a momentary scare when her shark model floats towards her. But seconds later, the real thing shows up and is determined to get her. Mm-hmm. She drops her files in the water. She's trying to retrieve them, but the shark is persistent and she isn't able to do so. So this part is so clever. Like, it's so smart.
It proves that she's actually smart.
Yeah. Strips down to her bra and underwear. She puts her wetsuit underneath her, like she's standing on it. And she grabs an electrical cable from the wall behind her, creating like a live wire. So the shark is swimming towards her. She shoves that live wire into its mouth. It is ingenious.
Isn't that what happens in Jaws 2? That's why I love Jaws 2, because that's how they kill it. And it's awesome.
Yep.
So it's funny because I feel like all three shark deaths echo shark deaths in Jaws.
I bet that's on purpose. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. Her discs are now ruined. They've been like basically
fried.
So the three survivors reunite. It is time to get the hell out of there. The new plan, sharks are apparently attracted to churning water, as Katie already mentioned, as well as bright colors. So they're going to distract them using fire extinguishers and life jackets. Carter's going to let the room fill up with water, but they need to swim up slowly so they don't get the bends. Insert Radiohead song here.
Yes. That's also my fear, getting the bends. It's so scary.
I love this moment too when he's like, are you ready? And they're both like, no.
Yeah. It's so real.
That's exactly real. What I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Preacher gets to deliver a dramatic, though I walk through the valley of the
valley
of death, love it.
Speech that ends with two amen. Sharks down, Lord, amen. One demon fish to go.
Yes.
Can I get an amen?
Amazing.
They keep saying amen. It's so good.
Amen.
So they go through the hatch. They release their fire extinguishers. They start the ascent. And sure enough, the shark, as smart as it is, falls for the trick. Mm-hmm. So they all surface. It's over, right?
Nah.
Except it's not.
Of course not.
Preacher gets grabbed by a shark. He is being dragged through the water. But luckily, he has on a very large, ornate cross that he uses to repeatedly stab the shark, including in the eye.
And this is what you do in the eye or in the nose. He's so smart. Good job, buddy.
The shark lets go. Carter seizes the opportunity to swim out and rescue Preacher. Susan determines that he'll be okay, but they still need to get out of there. Because, you know, they're still in the middle of an ocean on a collapsing structure. So
good times.
Surrounded by a shark. Well, not surrounded by a shark, but still being hunted by a shark.
And there's sharks probably surrounding the area because they're in the ocean.
That's true. Carter is looking around. He comes to the realization that the sharks have been herding them to exactly where they want them.
Okay, do you think that's true?
I think it makes sense if they're smart. Like, they're going to like put the plan
the whole time. He's like using us to flood the facilities, like something he says. Like, really? You think they can think that?
I don't know if they're planning it, but I do think that they're doing it, whether it's accidental or not. I mean, it's still happening.
He just makes it sound like it was a plan they've been thinking of this whole time.
Yeah.
You know? And they're just waiting for the right opportunity.
Their nightly poker game. Yeah.
Right.
Susan finally realizes that they need to kill the last remaining shark. And they basically rig up an incendiary device to blow it up. The shark is too far away, though, because she's ramming the fence. She's trying to get out. Gladys wants to be in the deep blue sea.
Yeah.
Susan, at this point, decides to use herself as bait, and she slices into her hand. She is counting on pure animal instinct as she dives into the water. And sure enough, it works. The shark is distracted from the fence. Carter at this point realizes what she's doing and starts running towards her.
Not trying to shoot the shark, though. she does for no. She does that for no reason because he's just like, what?
I love how ridiculous. How the shark is a total dog and like smells the water to find her. It's very funny. The shot of the shark like sniffing.
Come on, guys. Susan is trying to pull herself out of the water, but the rung she grabs on comes off of the wall. And Carter dives into the water, but it is too late.
Waste.
Rest in peace, Susan. Gladys has one last meal.
Okay, but she literally did that so that the shark would get closer so that he could shoot it, and he doesn't. So, like, she died for no reason. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
Carter, presumably for the last time, because I'm sure he's not going anywhere near sharks after this, gets to wrestle a shark again. So, apparently, Susan was supposed to survive.
Oh.
But the test audience who saw the film
couldn't stand her. Yes, stand I love her. That. That makes me so happy.
Nice.
They saw her as the villain. So
yeah.
The production team did a one-day reshoot in the Universal Studios tank. They did some computer-generated work on the sharks to change it.
Wow.
And that's how Susan dies.
I wonder what the actress thought about that.
I know, right? Imagine. And like, imagine like trying to get hired again.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a compliment. The women aren't the villains always, so it's kind of a compliment on her part.
I mean, yes and no, right? Like,
yeah.
Because try getting hired again, and they're like, "Oh, like what was the last movie?"
Oh, yeah. Win?
And they're like, "Oh, the audience fucking hated me. They had to cut off." That's true. In like a very expensive reshoot.
That means she did her job. She did her job.
Then it also works with the movie, though, because, again, like, the movie doesn't play out at all how you expect. Like, I think from the beginning, most people probably think that Susan and Carter are going to be the ones that live, you know?
Yeah.
That's what Sherry, I remember
Did they say that all three of them were going to live? And how or what did they say?
Yeah, all three of them were supposed to live. Okay. Yeah. It's also interesting when you look at the fact that you think, like, Thomas Jane Carter is set up as the hero. Mm-hmm. And so is Samuel L. Jackson. Like, Russell is... He's kind of the heroic figure who survives this avalanche, and he's like a badass too. And neither one of them kill a shark.
Oh,
that's true.
Yeah, that's a good point. I kind of like that.
So Preacher, being the badass hero that he is, he grabs a spear gun. He shoots, saying, "This is for Scoggins." And his aim is slightly off, hitting both the shark and Carter. And Carter yells at him to blow it before the shark submerges once again.
Yep.
Going now for the severely damaged fence. The shark gets a brief taste of freedom before getting blown to bits as Preacher uses the MacGyvered bomb.
So cool.
Luckily, Carter's on the other side of the fence. He'd grabbed on as the shark swam through, and shark bits just rain down on the ocean surface. And Carter reappears.
Question is, how did his face not get somewhat damaged? How close was he to that explosion? Because that's a giant-ass shark. And he's not that far.
And the way he was holding onto that fence while the water was like rushing it, he would have gotten like.
Yeah, and how it blew. Exactly.
He would have been hurt a lot more.
Yeah. He should at least have fence grid marks on his face.
Exactly. At least have some fence on his face.
Preacher tells him to bring him some sushi as Carter swims back to the wreckage. And
where's the best?
Carter ribs him for. And rips him about aiming for a 45-foot shark and hitting him before Preacher reminds him that it could have been worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Preacher asks the question we've all been thinking. Are you sure it was just three sharks? And even though Carter says, yeah, he pulls his legs out of the water, which is just a delightful
delightful moment.
Luckily, the next shift is on their way as we see a boat approach, which talk about a bad day at work. Like, that's what you show up to.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And Carter says he quits while Preacher says, take me back to the ghetto.
I love it.
My favorite moment probably in the whole movie is the way they both just kind of like flop on their backs. Like, you expect someone to do that at the end of like every kind of action movie. You know, they're just like, fuck, I'm done. I love it.
And then LL Cool J's song, Deepest Bluest Shark's Fin, kicks in, and that's the movie.
Yay.
So body count. So we had 9.
Damn.
4 by shark attack. Mm-hmm. 4 by explosion.
Are we counting the sharks?
Oh, no. But the shark's not the villain, so we should count the sharks.
You should.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. See? They're not the only villain. Yeah.
So 12.
12. And
the tiger shark.
You're going to count bird.
And the tiger shark. 13. 13.
Oh, and the tiger shark.
And the bird, 14, yeah.
Because you got to count bird. Yeah. All right. So overall thoughts on the movie. And I also want to know, because I feel like the kills are all really good in this, what was your favorite death?
My favorite is the, I call it the Susan versus shark scene. That scene in her room with her and the shark when she electrocutes it. That's my favorite. I love the way it plays out. And even though, like, when the shark is like all thrashing around, I'm like, he totally would have knocked over that thing, or she would have knocked over that thing that she was standing on. But whatever, the CGI in some of these parts is just the worst.
But, oh yeah, it's weird because there's some shots where they look super good, and other shots where it's like, wow, this is
not when it's great. Like the full body shark is when it looks not so great. But when they're using like the animatronic, it looks really good. I like it. That's my favorite.
I mean, obviously Samuel L. Jackson, but I really, really love I don't know her name, the blonde's death, because I think the whole how quickly it happens and the idea of that happening is terrifying, that the ladder falls, you fall in the water, and immediately like a shark brings you up and someone literally sees you die while he's trying to grab you. Like, it's terrifying. So I do love that one.
I think I also sympathize with that one the most, because I would be the person that falls off the ladder because I have no upper arm strength. And I'd be like,
exactly.
Well, I think that every time that it sucks that she fell because she wasn't gripping enough. If she was just gripping, bummer.
Let that be a lesson to us, to learn to work on our grip strength.
Upper body strength. Exactly. Got it.
Exactly. You know, just in case we're in a shark lab. A shark lab.
On the off chance.
On the off chance. Listen, someday you'll find yourself in a shark lab and you'll be like, damn it. Ariana told me to work on my grip strength. And here I am. Definitely Samuel L. Jackson's for sure my favorite. It's just, it's perfect and iconic and like ridiculous. Yes. Like, over the top. And I loved the kitchen scene with LL. Like, that was too. It was amazing. I mean, it's like ridiculous. Like, totally makes no sense. But, I love it. Like, that's the whole movie, so whatever.
It gives me Scream Camp vibes, because he's clearly making fun of what's happening, which is why I like it. I like when it makes fun of itself.
Everything about the movie during our conversation is, like, everything that I love about the movie, pretty much.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, definitely.
That's why I love it. It's like, I don't care about anything. I have such a good... I saw this in the theaters when it came out. I have loved this movie, like, ever since then. And none of that shit... I can criticize all the little nitpick, all the little stuff in it. I don't care still. It's so much fun, and I have such a good time every time I watch this movie. I never get sick of it.
Oh, me too.
Fucking love it.
Me too. Yeah. Back in the day when I used to have, oh God, do we remember what cable is? It's like one of those for me, like Jurassic Park, where every time it was on, I was like, oh shit. And even if it was in the middle, I'd be like, yes, I would watch it every time. I just think it's, even though it's funny because Sherry was saying that they didn't really intend for it to be campy, but it totally is in the best way. So I'm very glad for that.
That's the reason 100%. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what makes it fun. It's so fun.
It's not trying to be any cooler than it is.
Yeah.
It's just trying to have fun, be a fun shark movie.
Live its life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ariana, this is the first time you saw it, correct?
Yes, it was.
And what were your first impressions of it?
I know, right? It's so great. I really enjoyed it. It's just like, it's kind of dumb, and I love all kinds of horror movies, and I love like the camp over the top ones, and I thought this was like the perfect mix of some of the more classic monster movie tropes, and then also like ridiculousness, and like LL Cool J and Samuel L. Jackson are just incredible and so good in this. And it was quite fun. Quite fun. I quite enjoyed it.
This movie made me have a crush on LL Cool J for sure.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
I mean, LL supposedly stands for Ladies Love Cool J.
It's true. It's very true. Really? It is true.
Oh my God. Amazing.
I never knew that.
I didn't know that either.
I didn't know that. This lady does love Cool J, so yeah.
Okay, so how many scaredy cat screams would you give it on a scale of 1 through 5?
5.
So quick.
Nice. Decisive. I appreciate that. 5.
I love this movie.
Like a solid 3.5. Like, it's, I would definitely watch it again. Will I watch it again tomorrow? Like, probably not. and it's like, it's fun and campy and scary, like, you know, a couple of good, you know, surprises in there. And yeah, Skarsgård floating through on that thing is pretty incredible. So
I also, every time I'm like, did you need to give him that much leeway? Like, pull him in a little more to the helicopter. Because
yeah,
you guys are asking for it a little bit with that storm. Yeah, I think I give it a solid 4, or maybe like an extra, like a 4.2 or something, because I've just seen it so many times that just makes me happy every time. And I think it's the perfect kind of thriller type movie that you want, where you're just happy after because you laughed through half of it, which is my favorite kind. So all about it.
Yeah, I'm never too stingy with like giving something a perfect score just because I really liked it. And this is just one of those movies for me. So it's a 5 for me.
I'm the same way. Like I am very generous with my ratings when I give them. So,
well, Sherry, you never give yours. What's yours?
I never give
my
rating.
Do it right now.
Do it now.
Do it.
Do it.
Do it for Gladys.
I can't believe Deep Blue Sea is going to be the movie that's going to get me to give my rating.
Or I'll just ask every time.
Yeah. I you know what? I'm gonna give it a 4.5.
Yes. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I love what I refer to, and I know other people refer to, it's not me, why am I saying that? I love a good popcorn movie. And like, I feel this is just a good popcorn movie. Yeah, it's totally. So much fun.
Totally.
It never fails to entertain me. The characters are delightful. The first time you see it, there are things that happen that you don't expect to happen. Mm-hmm. Like Samuel L. Jackson's death in particular always like sticks out for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm 100% on the LL Cool J train for this.
Yes. So.
Oh, yeah.
I also did have a big rant that I was going to go on about the fact that misogyny is at play with us hating, us hating Susan.
I think about it too, and I feel guilty, but I'm like, you know what? I'm sorry. She earned that.
You can still hate her. That's okay. Yeah. But I just think like when you look at like, so I'll go on a little bit of a rant, but I may have to cut it out if I can't edit out the fire alarms. But when you look at the way we look at Jim, who is equally, as I said, complicit in the mm-hmm. illegal experiments, we don't hate him the way we hate her. He gets off. He doesn't get off scot-free.
Apparently not.
He's not he gets hated off shark-free. Like she is. Right? So
yeah.
I don't know.
She's more prominent in the movie. And you can see the... Yeah, you can see the way other characters hate her, like especially Janice. She always like, gives her
so
shit.
So clearly there's an underlying thing because her coworkers are also not fans. So
yeah, I don't think that she's bad because of the experiments. I think she's bad because like it takes her a long time in this movie to admit that she's done
exactly.
something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's like the lack of apologies and it's the lack of caring about anything else. And clearly if it's underlying like that, she might not be the best to work with because she's probably not treating them well.
And yeah. I think that's the thing. I think she's very she's a very assertive woman. She is very driven. She is focused on her goal, and that's the only thing that she sees. And I think she kind of embodies that mad scientist that you see in like mm-hmm. in monster yeah. movies all the time, right? Where like yeah. that is all she is thinking about is the end goal, and the end justifies the means to her.
Yes. But there is a way to be strong and driven without letting everybody go on the wayside and literally letting them die. So
I mean, literally letting 14 people die because 14 people and animals.
And by people, the animals are people yeah. as well.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you for coming along to Aquatica with us today. Why don't you tell us where we can find you and tell us a little bit about your projects, podcasts, that sort of thing.
Let's see. You can find me on Instagram at Ari in the City, but it is mostly cats. And there may or may not be a little bit of a podcast brewing. It's another Yay. Movie podcast. But you know, we're still in the early stages, so I don't want to get into it too much. But of course, the Scaredy Cat Land people will be the first to know when that gets up and running.
That's going to be the name of my amusement park, Scaredy Cat Land.
Scaredy Cat Land? I love it.
Scaredy Cat Caves? You want to do like a double?
I like it. I like it.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Michelle in Agen. And follow my podcast, Movies for Life. Listen to us. We're pretty cool. Sherry likes us, so that means that's a high praise.
You're that's legit. All I need to know, yeah.
You're legit.
It is a really good podcast, so.
Aw, thank you.
I am on Twitter. I'm not on there very often unless it's political based. Let me be real. And that's at @Katie_usually on Twitter. And then on Instagram, Katie Sings, though, because I'm a theater nerd. So you're welcome. And I'm sorry. And I do have a podcast called Shit Simply the Best about Schitt's Creek. So if you love Schitt's Creek and you like people being very excited and talking over each other about it, because we're theater people as well, please listen to us. We're on all the platforms and we're on Instagram as well. And yeah.
Awesome. Also a very good podcast. So
thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. You can catch us on Twitter @CatScaredy and on Instagram @ScaredyCats the podcast. Subscribe wherever you find podcasts and don't forget to let us know what you think by leaving us a review. Until next time, stay scared.